is unique about the garden, the location, the climate, the soil. I mean, there's so much to talk about, but talking through, I suppose those the salient points that you did when we were walking around about
Yeah, okay.
physically gardening here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it really.
Right, okay.
And just see where we get to. But I'm not going to keep you for hours and hours, so it'd just be nice to get something. So what we need to do is just give it a couple of seconds of silence so I can edit it. So I'm here in Clare, in the west of Ireland, which is very dear to my heart because it's my mother's county. And I haven't been here for a long time. And I'm in a garden that I have had on my wish list for, well, forever, really. And I'm here with Carl Wright, and I'm at Cahir Bridge. It is an extraordinary garden, more extraordinary than I had even imagined it was going to be. So, Carl, hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for taking the time to chat
You're very welcome.
because I've been on a lovely tour around the garden this afternoon. So, poor you, you've had a tour around the garden and I've persuaded you to sit and have a little chat. But anyway, so, Carl, you are actually from Devon, aren't
I
you?
am originally,
Originally, yeah.
from South Devon. I haven't lived there for a long time, but that's where I was born and raised in Devon.
Yeah, lovely. And what brought you to the west of Ireland?
Well, originally holidays, because my background is actually ecology, and I've always been really interested in wildflowers, and I'm also interested in geology as well. So I love limestone landscapes, and I was a potholer for years and years and years. So holidays were in the Burren, and the Burren just gave me absolutely everything I wanted. I had a limestone landscape, I had the geology, I had the caving. And of course, I had the amazing wild flora that we've got here. So it was a perfect destination for a holiday, really. And it was caving holidays. And then I gradually thought, well, I ought to get to know the place a bit better. And I'd also like to get to know Ireland better because I knew nothing about Ireland. So I decided maybe it would be a good idea to perhaps try and find something to do here. And I applied for a few jobs and eventually I got one. I never intended to stay here. It was really only for a couple of years. But then after a while, I kind of got a bit restless and I wanted something to do. I wanted a house to play with. So going back all those years, there were plenty of derelict houses around and they were relatively cheap. And I bought this one and decided to renovate it. And that was really kind of what kept me here.
And before we get into the when and how and why, just describe the Burren for the few people who are left in the world who don't know what the Burren is, or describe the geology and the landscape of the Burren.
Well, it's one of the finest karst landscapes in Europe, actually. It's a fairly large area. It's about 360 square miles of not bare limestone pavement, but it is a limestone landscape generally, yes. It's well known for its flora, its native plants. It's very unusual flora here because we have Arctic, Alpine, Lusitanian flora all concentrated in the same place in huge numbers. So in spring, you've got ridiculous numbers of gentians, for example. Now, they're not rare. They're found in England, in parts of England, but in the Burren, there are just masses and masses and masses of them. Mountain avens, and of course, orchids as well. We have a fantastic selection of orchids here. So people do come to the Burren in May, usually in May, early June, just specifically to see the flora here. It is a very unusual
Yes,
landscape,
it is
yeah.
very unusual.
And we have the advantage as well of having a limestone landscape similar to Yorkshire, parts of Yorkshire perhaps, but we also have the coast.
Yes, because we're very close to the Atlantic.
Very close.
And I am surprised at the climate you have. I'd underestimated actually the climate, thinking it was just going to be wild and windy here all the time. But we can go into that in a little bit. So how did you find this particular plot, and when did you find it?
Well, this plot was a bit of a funny one because I knew this house from a very long time ago. I love old buildings, and any old building I always look at and explore. and I knew this house was here. So I always thought that would be a really lovely place to do up. And I did inquire whether it was for sale, and no, it wasn't for sale, and it would never be for sale. And I asked a few times over the years, and eventually I gave up trying because I was told simply not to bother because it would never be on the market. And it just came on the market in 1996, completely out of the blue. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time in the pub. And a neighbor said to me, "You know that house is for sale." And I said, "Really?" And he said, "I think so, yeah." So I jumped in and eventually I managed to get it.
But you pretty much had to rebuild it, did you?
It hadn't been lived in for 40 years. It was only lived in by one person and a farmer. And it hadn't been lived in for 40 years. So yeah, it was a bit of a mess. And the trees, the woodland around us, had come right up to the walls of the house. The trees were going in the windows.
Goodness.
And that's what I, but there was a couple of holes in the roof. Apart from that, it was perfectly okay. And I actually set myself a little bit of a challenge too, because I had done up a house in England, and I had done up one in Ireland, but I'd used a lot of outside help. I'd used tradesmen to do things like put roofs on and do windows and things. And I'd watched them over the years and helped them. And I realized that it wasn't rocket science. And I thought, well, hang on, maybe I can do this myself. So I set a challenge to see if I could restore the house entirely on my own. And that was really the object of the exercise. And I did it.
And the interesting thing that you, well, one of the first things you said to us when we were walking around the garden this afternoon was, you were an ecologist, are an ecologist, you weren't a horticulturist or a garden designer. And yet, what you've done here is created obviously a garden and an ecosystem. And there were so many things that you were saying that you could have been speaking as a garden designer. I mean, you have designed your own garden, but it was so funny. It kept coming back to me when you were saying, "Oh, I'm not a garden designer. I'm not a horticulturist." And yet, you are really. Now you are.
Well, I've learned.
You've learned, yeah. And you are, and spreading the word far and wide. But also, what has just occurred to me is the fact that you started off underground as a potholer, and here you are now on top of the ground, battling with it. So what were the challenges? The house, obviously, you really went to town on, but what were the challenges of the site? And also, you were explaining about the hazel woodland around. That was really interesting too. So should we start with the hazel woodland? Because that's very unique, isn't it?
It is absolutely the hazel woodland here. It's called Western Atlantic Hazel Woodland. It's a unique habitat. The burren is well represented. There's more of it here really than anywhere else in the country. It's a habitat which is only found really in three locations in the world. Here, Scotland, west of Scotland, and in a few places in Northern Ireland and Donegal. There's just one or two little islands of it, pockets of it. It's what would have come in after the Ice Age had finished. It would have been one of the first habitats that would have colonized, and basically it's been here ever since. It was cleared extensively during the Bronze Age. They started clearing it for agriculture, and of course it's been relentlessly cleared ever since. So that's given us the landscape which we see, which we tend to think of as being a natural open landscape, but in fact it isn't at all. And the burren is really an artificial landscape because it is a product of agriculture.
Oh,
It
interesting.
should be covered in this hazel forest, this hazel woodland.
Wow.
Now technically it's temperate rainforest. That's what it's actually classed as. And its nearest living relatives would be Madeira, the Azores, and the three Western Canary Islands. And it is rainforest. It's temperate rainforest, you
But
know.
you were also saying that hazel in more recent years isn't necessarily used for any, it's not used for hurdle making or coppicing
No,
or,
it's not really used for anything at all, which is quite odd,
Yeah,
really.
because in the UK, hazel is used for,
All
beam
sorts of
sticks
things.
and
Exactly.
hurdles and,
No, it's not really used. There's not really a
No.
history of it being used here either, which I think is a bit odd. But just a different culture, I suppose.
So you were surrounded by hazel woodland
Yep.
and then, well, and not, yeah, and trees coming up to the door. But I suppose the main challenge for you is the lack of soil, basically. You were
Yeah.
gardening on pure stone.
Absolutely. And when you look around you and see this woodland, or even walk through it actually, you kind of assume that it's like a normal woodland, and it's got a lovely woodland floor with beautiful woodland soil. But that's not the case. These trees are technically hydroponic. They're actually using water rather than soil. There is no soil under these trees.
Yeah.
There's a very thin layer of leaf mold, but no soil.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, the entire property is absolute limestone pavement.
Right.
And if you take the trees off it, you're just completely back to the surface of the moon.
Right.
You know?
And so the trees are putting their roots down,
they go down
through
into the
fissures
cracks.
And
yeah,
cracks,
yeah.
And things.
And
yeah.
They
okay.
reach the water table.
Yeah.
And they're able to grow. And because of our very high rainfall here, they're able to survive very, very well.
Right,
now, if you get a dry spell, if you get a dry spell of, say, a few weeks, you really notice it because you can see patches of the woodland where the leaves come off, you know, in the summer.
Yes, yeah.
Because obviously the water table lowers and so they can't actually get at the water.
Right.
But
right.
they always come back again the following year. They don't really, they're very difficult to get rid of, actually.
So how did you transition from an ecologist into a gardener?
Well, I don't really think I have transitioned from one to the other. And I've actually come to the conclusion that you cannot actually be a really good gardener unless you've got a fairly good working knowledge of ecology. The two are totally inseparable. If it's to work, yes, you can grow plants, you can make a garden, anybody can do that, but for it to really work, you do need a reasonable working knowledge of ecology. The two are completely inseparable.
So
I think that's been, you know, that's been a huge part of how this garden has developed. My knowledge of the native ferns, the mosses, the lichens, the animals, the insects, the birds, it's all part of this garden. I've got an interest in geology. I've an interest in archaeology, history, culture. And all those elements are all included in this garden. This is not just about plants. And gardens shouldn't be just about plants, because there's so many different levels to a garden, and the more of those levels you can get into it, the better the garden becomes.
So what was your, I mean, today we walked sort of in a clockwise way around the house, and and we mustn't forget the river, of course. I mean, the garden and the house are, well, your garden is called Cahir Bridge.
Yeah.
And it's the River Cahir, which right. runs over the Burren.
Very short river. It's only a couple of miles long.
All right. And it does it flow down? Where does it get?
It's just literally from up the road, down the middle of the valley, and then out into the sea on the beach.
So
it's a short river.
Yeah.
Shouldn't really be there. But the reason it's there is because this is a glacial valley, and the bottom of the valley is filled with glacial moraine, glacial till, which basically has clogged the cracks and fissures and cave systems which would be underneath. So the river can't get underground, which is what it would normally do in a limestone landscape. So it has to flow on the surface.
Right, right.
So it's kind of a spate river, really. It does react entirely to the weather. It's usually there, but it has been changing. And for the last 5 to 10 years, it is behaving differently. It does dry up now from time to time, which it never really used to do.
It's quite worrying.
And of course we get floods, and we get very, very bad floods, luckily not that often, but we do. And are they becoming more frequent? Probably are becoming more frequent. The weather is definitely changing here. It has changed a lot. I think it's probably fair to say we are getting more sunshine than we used to. We certainly have this year, and the temperatures are higher than they used to be.
Right.
That's absolutely definitely.
Right.
The last few years, we've had days where it goes into the mid-20s, and like 20 years ago, if you got a 19, you'd be like, that would be hot. This year, we've had countless days where it's gone over 30.
Yeah. So your challenges in terms of climate, I assumed you would be getting the winds coming in over the Atlantic, but you were saying no, you're sheltered from the winds.
Yeah, we're in a bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you gave this position to a gardener, they'd probably say no thank you. I mean, it is awful. It's northeast facing, which is a no-no to start with.
Yeah,
it's on the bottom of a fairly steep slope and a high one too. So, of course, it's a frost hollow because we're in this basin.
And what happens
in the winter is the cold air comes down behind us here.
Yeah.
And once it gets to the bottom of the slope, it won't go up the other side.
So
you get this build-up of cold in here.
Yeah.
And, it's a really cold garden in the winter.
Yeah.
Not everywhere, but in quite a lot of it, you'd get quite cold, especially down near the river.
Yeah.
All the lower parts of the garden are where the cold sits.
Yeah.
The higher parts, funnily enough, are the warmest parts and the parts that tend not to get too much
Yeah.
frost. Wind is not an issue in here.
Right.
That is partly why I really, really wanted this house. I don't like wind. I
Right.
hate it.
Oh, right.
I really don't like wind at all. And so there are very few places around here that aren't clobbered by wind every 5 minutes, and I just couldn't cope with that at all. It just makes me, I can't cope with wind at all. So this is brilliant because we just don't get wind in here, and we're
That's
only a mile
amazing.
from the beach. You can hear it, and
Yeah.
the other side of the valley gets knocked to pieces with the wind,
Gosh, that's
but
good.
it just misses us,
Yeah.
and we're in this lovely little bowl which is really sheltered. But that means you're going to be in a frost hollow.
Yeah. So you started, I mean, you started with a garden that was basically pure rock, no soil.
Yeah, I've had to bring all the soil
Put
in,
all the soil in.
which in the beginning didn't bother me because I didn't really intend to do this.
Yeah.
I certainly never wanted a garden of this size,
Yeah.
and so I've needed soil and soil and soil. And yeah, I've lost count a bit, but up until COVID, I know I'd brought in over 1,500 tons of soil.
Good Lord.
Up until COVID, after that, yeah, I think most years I've had quite a few lorry fulls delivered, but I've lost track of it.
And you said that you hand sifted
Yeah, it's all been
all of
sieved.
that.
I never ever put soil in the garden
Yeah.
unless it's been sieved.
Yeah.
I started doing it really just to get rid of the stones because it was
Yeah.
always full of stones. And then I realized whilst I was sieving that there were things in it that I would rather not have.
Yeah.
So roots of convolvulus, which are
Yeah.
unmistakable. Luckily, so far, no Japanese knotweed, but there
Yes.
will be a day when I get it.
Yeah.
I've just been lucky
Yeah.
because it is everywhere here. Couch grass, yeah, horsetail and things like that.
Yeah.
If you sieve the soil, you can pick out the roots.
Yes,
And if
yeah.
you're really thorough, you're going to start off with a clean garden,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it does make life
What a
easier.
labor of love, though, my
Yeah, but
goodness.
I tell you, the work it saves in the future, because
Yes,
I just
yeah.
don't weed.
Yes.
The garden is cleaned up in March, April, and May. I have to clean it up ready for opening, but it's cleaned up after the winter because I don't really do anything to it in the winter. I just leave it to do its
Yeah,
own
yeah,
thing.
yeah.
And then in March, April, and May, yeah, it's thoroughly cleaned up and tidied after the winter. And that's when the weeding's done. And after that, I don't bother with it.
Yeah,
I
and you
just
said you
leave
don't
it
have to
be.
water?
I never have to water, no,
Yeah.
because of the rain.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
we're doing well, really, to get a few minutes without it raining.
I know.
We
I'm watching a big
certainly,
black
I
cloud
can
up
see
there.
him over there now. Yeah.
So where did you
Yeah.
start? You started in the front of the,
I started out the
yeah.
front of the house. You know, the front door is where everybody starts garden. Even non-gardeners, they do like to keep their front door tidy. Well, most people do, and presentable. It's the bit you see every day as you're moving from the house to the car or the house to the outside. It's the bit that the neighbors see all the time when they're driving or walking past. The front door is where people start. And of course, that was the logical place to start. And I made a little garden outside the front door and then just gradually expanded it. It's a little bit ad hoc. People often say to me, I love the way the garden is all divided up into different rooms, and they are very different. That wasn't a design thing, it's simply a practical solution because when I take on a new project, I've got to be very careful I don't take on too much in one go. So it's ended up as a garden that's had bits added all the way through. And so, yeah, it has accidentally ended up in
And
rooms.
the area that the garden takes up is about 2 acres.
It's around 2 acres now,
Which
yeah,
is a
which
good
is it's a
size,
good
isn't it? It
size.
is a good size.
For one person, it is a good size. And
And
bear in mind, the average rainfall here is well over 5 feet, 250
5 feet.
days a year of
Wow.
rain. You
Wow.
know, there aren't that many days where you can actually get meaningful work done. I mean, there's this to consider as well. We lose an awful lot of days each year because the weather is just simply too difficult to get out here.
Goodness, yeah.
So, yeah.
And you've got an interesting relationship with lawns that you explained earlier. So I'd love to
Yeah,
hit to
lawns.
yeah. So you started a lawn at the front, and this is a man who really was not in love with lawns.
No, I hated lawns. I can't see the point of lawns, really. They're okay outside a hotel or something, but
A golf
or
course,
to play golf on, but that's it. I absolutely despise lawns, really, especially in countryside gardens. They really look ridiculous. They're just too artificial. They're blank. They're green. They're just horrible, and they are generally, if depending on the lawn you want, quite high maintenance. So I was really reluctant to go down the lawn route. I hadn't got much choice in the front, so I ended up with a lawn there. I don't use grass seed. I never ever use grass seed. I just get the place prepared and then just leave it and see what happens. And of course, your dandelions and your docks and your horsetail and everything else comes up. And if you strim it a few times, you end up with a lawn. But it's a lawn with a difference. It's a lawn that does work in a countryside situation. It's untidy. It's got flowers and plants in it, not grass. It's low maintenance. You don't need to mow it very often. And it's hard wearing, which is important for a garden that's open to visitors too. Daisies will take hundreds of feet, no problem at all. Grass won't. It turns into a mud bath in a climate like ours. So the lawns always look sort of half okay, even if you've got 40 people walking over them. But they are boring. It depends where they are. I have them in all over the place now. I use them for bulbs. So apart from the immediate utility lawns, which are kind of right up next to the house, they're pretty clear because they are for sitting on or whatever. But the further you move away from the house, the more the lawns are used as areas to plant bulbs. I try to keep bulbs out of flower borders. They're a pain in flower borders. They're much better in grass. And by planning, if you start with snowdrops, crocuses, move into daffodils, move into camassias, you can actually have your lawn just covered in bulbs for almost half the year. Works really well. If the aspect is right, towards the edges of the garden where it's more open, perhaps, and where there's more light and where it's better drainage, I combine the bulbs with wildflower meadows. So that's a double whammy. And so they're not lawns at all, apart from in the middle of winter, perhaps just briefly before the snowdrops come up. And they're the only place that I can really plant trees. Because I have no soil or no depth. The flower beds are too shallow to plant trees in. You can just about get away with shrubs. But I can, if I find cracks deep enough in the rock, I can get trees established in some of the lawns. That's partly why I keep making new ones, because I collect trees.
No, we'll talk about your collections in a second. So, but just on the bulbs for a second, you mentioned earlier on that Ireland used to be one of the chief producers
Of daffodil
of
bulbs.
daffodil bulbs.
We actually had a thriving daffodil industry in
Why do you think that didn't carry on? And you know, like Cornwall is very well known, and this
I
the
guess
Channel Islands.
competition, the usual story. It's cheaper to produce them somewhere else. It's the same old thing, isn't it? So I guess it moved to Holland and Belgium, and that was it. And just not profitable, I suppose. It is actually coming back,
Good,
surprisingly.
good.
There are a few farms now which are producing Irish daffodils. And I saw them in Tesco's the other day. Irish produced
Oh,
daffodils
fantastic.
from Cork, I think.
Oh, right.
And oddly enough, there were daffodil breeders, well-known daffodil breeders, in Cork
Oh, right.
in the 1800s and in the early 1900s.
Right.
We do have a history of daffodil breeding. There are thousands of Irish cultivar daffodils somewhere out there. There's a lot of historical ones, some very common ones actually, which everybody knows are, believe it or not, considered Irish. The obvious example is Rip Van Winkle.
Oh, right.
And although technically it probably wasn't born in Ireland, it was registered in
Oh,
Ireland,
right.
and it was
Interesting.
the first time it was registered. So yeah, it is. It's included as an Irish daffodil. So I've got into I love daffodils anyway, but I've got into Irish cultivars. And I'm trying to establish a collection now. There's over 260 different Irish cultivars here. They date from the 1700s right up to the present day. So, yeah. So that required another couple of new lawns as
And
well.
you've got a sort of wet area of grass, the way you said you've got bulb, you've got fritillarias, you've got camassias,
Yeah,
you know.
camassias do really well here. They flower too early, but they do well. Camassias are fantastic things. I love them. And they seed around as well. I have a fairly good collection of Camassia. Fritillary do very well down by the river. Any
Lovely.
of the damp meadows, the fritillaries do really, really well in. Tulips, I'm not a huge fan of. I do like the species ones. The colourful blousy ones, no, not really my thing. they really don't work in country
No.
gardens.
And
They're too
where in the
artificial
garden do you
working
put the
here.
species tulips? Are they
The
more?
species tulips are actually in lawns.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, I found they work quite well in south-facing, preferably drier areas, sort of in under the roots of hazels. They seem to do quite well. Yeah, I've got quite a lot of species tulips. There are some in the beds, Tarda and some of those ones I have scattered around the garden, but generally they're in the lawns. I do have some normal tulips. There are some in the back garden. I tend to stick to the same colours. And there are a few in some of the grass areas. I'm experimenting with them, trying to naturalize them in grass. Some of them are okay, actually, and you will get quite a few years out of them. And they do work quite well in lawns, depending on the lawn. I'm sticking to whites in the grass areas. Yeah, I'm not really veering away from white.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about that sort of association with the wild, and we were talking particularly about hydrangeas, and that you've got an area where you're more colourful because you've got a bit of a thing about hydrangeas, haven't you?
I
You know,
have.
the colourful ones, you've kind of you've got them in a little bit of a secluded dell, if you like, but that but you're quite you believe, and quite rightly so, that you know there's certain things to associate with the wilder landscape. If you put anything too ornamental in a garden like this, it's going to look
It
peculiar.
is going to look out of place. And of course, the bottom line is a garden should be part of its surrounding landscape. Not always possible to do, granted. But in rural situations, it is usually possible to at least make an attempt to do it. It often means that you might not be able to have a garden that you particularly would like. But that's a problem because you have to look outside. I always say to people that are designing a new garden around a new build house or even an older house in the countryside situation, the first thing you must do is look over that wall, find out what's going on around you, and just think about how you can create a garden that will bring that in and make it seem like it is part of the garden. Every different landscape has a different challenge. You couldn't get a more difficult challenge than the landscape I'm in. But it's really important to me. I don't want a visual eyesore. And a lot of rural gardens, as far as I'm concerned, are eyesores because they just do not fit with their landscape. They can be stunning gardens in the right place, but not with a backdrop of this similar sort of landscape, you know?
One of your collections that you're passionate about is Crataegus.
Yeah, I'm really into my hawthorns. I love them. I mean, they're my favourite tree. Ireland's covered in them. We've only got one species here in this country. There's two in the UK, well, three if you include the hybrid. But I've always liked them, and they grow so well in Ireland. I wanted to plant trees, but I knew it was going to be a problem. But again, rather than plant things that perhaps I really like, I love acers. But I'd never plant an acer in this garden. It would look absolutely stupid. It would look wrong. So I looked around me and thought, I love hawthorns. Look, they're everywhere. The place is covered in them. Let's just go for hawthorns and hazels. And people say, why are you planting hazels? You're clearing acres of the stuff. Yes, I am. But they work. They visually match what's here, but they also ecologically match what's here. And that's important as well because the wildlife that's using this area is used to using hawthorn, it's used to using willow, alder, and hazel. So if I want those in my garden, I don't have to put the native ones in. I can put foreign ones in or garden cultivars. The point is, they are the same as what's going on around
And how many
you.
different Crataegus have you got
Well,
now?
I'm up to 30 now, species and cultivars. I'm always looking for more, but the problem is, I have nowhere to put them. So, and I'm really getting a bit too old to make another 2 acres of lawn. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But
So
anyway,
hydrangeas is another passion.
yeah, hydrangeas are, I never used to like them.
What swayed you
Having,
then? What was it that did?
well, it, actually, I always thought hydrangeas were very artificial looking. And to be honest, yeah, a lot of them are. But this brings us back to the point of putting things in where they're not clashing with the landscape. So what I'm doing with the hydrangea collect, I love them, but I'm making sure that they're not interfering with the outside picture. The whites are okay, the paniculatas are okay because they tend to be loose and informal. And from a distance, They could actually be an elder bush.
Yes, yes.
So they blend.
Yes,
But
yeah.
the coloured-y ones and the big
Yeah.
mop heads and the blousy, intense coloured ones, no.
Yeah.
They're hidden and they're in enclosed spaces or they're very near the buildings.
Right.
You can get away with that,
Yeah,
no
yeah,
problem at
yeah.
all. I realised after a few years with the hydrangeas that A, they were actually very good for pollinators. And this is something that really annoys me because a lot of people say, oh, don't plant hydrangeas because they're useless for bees. Yeah, they are useless for bees. Bees don't go anywhere near them, but bees are only a very small percentage of our pollinators. And this drives me mad because
Yeah.
the media does not focus on wasps, flies, dragonflies, the millions of other pollinators that we have. It's just bees, bees, bees. And to coin a phrase, it's not the be all and end all of
Yeah,
everything.
yeah.
So I found that hoverflies absolutely love the lacecap hydrangeas,
Interesting.
and beetles love them as well.
Oh,
Beetles
right.
are
Yes,
pollinators, and
absolutely.
hoverflies are our most valuable pollinator. We have
Right.
more hoverflies than anything
Yeah.
else.
You've got a pretty amazing fern collection too, haven't you?
I have. Yeah,
Oh.
ferns are a bit of an addiction as
And
well.
your theory about green. You
Yeah.
said a beautiful thing this afternoon about under grey skies.
Yeah,
What
yeah,
repeat
yeah,
that
yeah.
again. It was wonderful about.
Well, you know, there's a huge emphasis nowadays on colour, year-round colour, obsession with colour. You know, why?
And people don't think green's a color,
People
you
don't
know. Yeah,
think of green.
exactly.
Now, colour is a dodgy one because colour triggers mood changes, not always to an advantage. Now, if you want to deliberately be controversial, then fine, get away with it. I don't understand the thinking behind that, and I d really do not understand the point of it. But yes, I can see why some people want to be controversial. Color can be dodgy. Reds, oranges, yellows in particular. A lot of those colors are nature's warning symbols. This is why poisonous plants or poisonous animals tend to be black and yellow. Orange and yellow, orange and black, red and black, they're all warning signs.
Interesting, yeah.
And there, we've got that. We're an animal. We've got an inbuilt attention to, oh, yellow and black could be a problem, maybe poisonous, might bite, it might sting. There's a potential problem there.
Right.
That's why our road signs have evolved to be yellow
Oh,
and black and
right.
orange and
Yeah,
black
yeah.
and red and black. That's where
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
come
yeah,
from.
yeah.
So colour is. You have to be careful with it, and it can work to a disadvantage. It can upset people.
Yeah, yeah.
It can make people uncomfortable.
Yes, yeah.
Green is soothing.
Yeah.
It's calming. And we're surrounded by green and we're used to it. So it makes sense to use it.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, all the bright coloured flowers, what's the brightest coloured flower we have in Ireland or in the UK? Wildflower. We haven't got them. We've got convolvulus.
Yeah.
That's our biggest native flower.
Yeah.
Foxgloves.
Yeah.
It's a subtle shade of purple.
Yeah,
It is a
yeah.
subdued,
Yes,
subtle shade.
yeah.
We have no gaudy colours. We have no bright colours. We have no prairies. They don't belong in
Yeah.
this
Yeah,
landscape. They
yeah.
don't belong in this environment.
Yeah.
And we're, I think, tuned in to greens. And most of the colouredy stuff does originate in countries with blue skies, high UV light levels, and that's where they look fantastic.
Yeah, it's true,
Do
it's
they
true.
look good under leaden grey skies where the ground is wet and dreary? Personally, I don't think they do. I think green works really well,
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
yeah.
Use colour with care.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing about further up in the garden is all the different textures. Once you've got this palette of green, you begin to appreciate the textures, the
You
difference in
do,
textures
yeah,
and forms
absolutely,
and everything, and
yeah.
the ferns. But I was very pleased as we were going through the garden for you to say that you're getting a little collection of Deutzias together as
I
well.
love
Yeah,
Deutzias, yeah, I
yeah,
really love Deutzias.
yeah.
They're very underrated.
They are
They're
incredibly,
incredibly underrated,
yeah.
and to be honest, Weigelas are really underrated as
Yes,
well,
yeah.
because they're fantastic. Like they're in flower again now. That's twice a year,
Yeah.
and some of them are spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like those. Oh, I have a little lot of collections. The ferns, going back to the ferns, ferns do really well here.
Yeah.
They love this climate,
Yeah.
and the conditions suit them. Because even I found here, I learned my lesson with hostas actually,
Yeah.
because I assumed that hostas needed shade, because they do generally. And I was putting them in shade, but a lot of them weren't really doing very well, and some of them were even dying. So I brought them out into full sun. Well, that's our version of full
Yes.
sun. And they took off.
Yeah.
So you see, our light levels are so low that shade-loving plants, according to a book or the internet, no, you need to give them more light, because shade here is pitch dark.
Right,
So
yes.
you've got to be careful. Even the ferns now, some of them, they do need that little bit more light.
Yes, yeah.
So I have to bring them out
Yes, yeah.
into light. And I have to be actually quite careful what I put in what I would consider very dark shade.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah,
I
yeah,
really have to watch
yeah.
that. Yeah, ferns, yeah, about 230 different ones, I think, species and cultivars. I'm also really into orchibas, the most underrated
Good for
shrub there
you.
is.
Good for you.
I
Yeah.
know,
Yeah. No,
and
it's great,
I
isn't
always feel kind of a bit odd, because you can't admit you like orchibas because everybody
it?
hates them. But they are amazing plants. They're
Yeah.
seriously undervalued.
Oh, yeah.
I do know Roy Lancaster is a big fan of
Yeah.
orchibas,
Well, there you are
and
then.
so
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
says something.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I think they're brilliant, and
Yeah.
I've got a fairly big collection of orchibas as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm a bit of a plant collector, I suppose. Yeah, there's
A
lots of
bit of a
different
plant
things
collector, I would say.
here.
But as well as plants, I mean, obviously the garden is has a lot of structures and a lot of stone that you've used. I mean, all the walls and everything that you've built here is stone from
It's all from the
all
garden.
from the
Yeah,
garden.
it's all from the
And
garden.
you've built walls, you've built the most extraordinary moon gate, which is fantastic. And the latest thing now is up at the very top of the garden,
The folly.
the folly, which is I when we were walking around, we'd got to about two-thirds of the way through the garden, and I thought, oh, here we are now, this is the end. But no, I could see through the clearing this amazing round tower, which is just beautiful with mosaic floor, with pebble mosaics. And I mean, you must have spent how long did you take to build that? Must it?
I've been at that on and off for 5 or 6 years now. You
Wow.
see here, with a garden of this size, and it is only me, it is quite, I have to balance my time.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not raining, I have to cut grass. If it's this, that, and the other, I have to
Yeah.
really work according to the conditions.
Yeah.
And so some years, if you get a lot of bad weather, you just get way behind with general day-to-day maintenance. And being open to the public, I have to make sure the paths are quite clean,
Yeah.
sweep the leaves, make sure the toilet's clean. It's
Yeah,
all those other
all
things.
the things you don't think about.
So
Yeah.
some years when the weather is bad, you don't really get a chance to make any progress in further developments. And we've had a few of those lately. So the tower, it's an on and off project, but I really, really wanted to finish it this year,
Yeah.
and I finished it on Sunday.
Fantastic.
I've spent the last 3 weeks, 7 days a week, on my
Oh my
knees at
goodness.
that floor,
Oh, and
but
we were
it's
the
done.
first people to walk
You
on
were
it
the
today.
very first
Oh,
people to
we
walk
should have
on it
cut a little
today.
ribbon, shouldn't we?
We should have done, actually. I didn't think about that. Yeah,
Oh, brilliant.
that would have been
And
a good idea.
also wildlife. So you mentioned you've got a family of foxes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there's always foxes here. Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm surprised we haven't had an appearance yet, because
And pine
they must be able
martins
to
as
hear
well.
me, so they should be around.
Oh.
There's
Pine
a lot
martin.
of wildlife
Yeah.
here, a lot of wildlife.
Yeah.
But it's here anyway. But it's quite interesting, actually. The biodiversity, which is now another trendy word. When I started this project, I had a monoculture of Western Atlantic hazel woodland. Fantastic. I love it. But there are hundreds of acres of it around here. Making a garden in this small area compared is not really relevant to the big picture. The biodiversity has increased enormously since I made this garden, because what I've basically done is created several different habitats and ecosystems that weren't here before.
Right.
And it was quite amazing. The bird life, the species list has skyrocketed.
Wow.
And it's birds that use this which don't use the hazel woodland.
Oh,
You
interesting.
see, they
Yeah.
can't
Yes.
use the hazel
Yes.
woodland
Yeah.
because it is very dark. It's full of wrens and things, and the birds use the canopy. They don't really use the woodland because it's not a big woodland of oak trees. It's quite a dense, dark canopy. It's kind of strange. So it's not that good for birds, but the garden, of course, is. So I do get an amazing range of species in here. The insect life has skyrocketed since I've done the garden as
Wow,
well. Again, because I've created different habitats. The river, the pond has made a massive difference. Okay, there's a river there, but the ecology of a river is totally different to the ecology of a pond.
Right, yeah.
And by creating a pond, I've brought in pond species, which
Yes.
weren't, they must have been around, but they've made this their home now.
Yes, yeah,
And
yeah.
even the little water features, which are scattered throughout the garden, they're still ponds and they're
Yes.
full of wildlife.
Yeah.
It is quite incredible,
Yeah.
you know. Clearing spaces within the woodland, if you're design the spaces correctly as well. The Riverside Walk is a classic example. There is basically an open corridor that runs parallel to the river, right? It's quite long and it's a hawking corridor
Oh.
for dragonflies, but also for my Daubenton's bats. I have
Ah.
Daubenton's bats in the bridge
Right.
and they use that. They love it. They're always up and down.
Yeah.
So they can go up the river, back the corridor, and round, and it's a fantastic hunting corridor for
Wow.
them to use.
Wow.
They couldn't use this space. It's
Yes.
not usable for them. It's the
Right.
wrong habitat.
Right. Gosh, it's
Yeah,
fascinating.
and the bats use the back garden because, again, it's an open space and
Yes,
there's
yeah.
plenty for them in here, and they live in the roof of the house.
Yeah, yes.
So yeah, there's lots of things. Oh, the wildlife's amazing. Pine martens, bank voles, shrews, wood mice by the billion, stoats. I usually have
All
a
right.
family of stoats there, quite
Right.
often not far from the house.
Goodness.
Oh, everything gets used to
Yeah.
you as well and becomes not tame, but not afraid of you.
Yeah.
And if you're in the garden every day, things very, very soon get
Get
used
used to
to you.
you.
They know your voice. If you talk to them, I know that sounds weird, but that's the best way to
Yeah.
get them familiar. That's how I get the foxes familiar. I just talk to them and
Yes.
they learn your voice so they can separate you from somebody else. And you can see the difference. If they hear me, fine, they'll come down.
Right.
The minute they hear a different voice,
They're
they're
off.
out
Yes, yeah.
and looking around
And
the
when
corner
I
again.
asked you whether you had a problem with deer, you said, no, there's no
No,
deer
it's
around here.
goats that's the problem
Goats.
here, yeah.
Wild goats.
Unfortunately, the
Yeah.
burn is covered in wild goats. There are thousands
And
of
they'll eat
them here.
anything, won't they?
Well, yeah, they sort of do. They have a preference for, unfortunately, for skinning the bark off the trees,
Oh, right.
high nutrients in them. And
Right.
their very favourite one is holly,
Right.
which is a real concern of mine because we have a lot of holly in the burn. Well, we did have a lot of holly in the burn, but the goats are skinning it. And of course, it gets killed. And it's a problem, I think, because we've got the holly blue butterfly for a start, which depends on it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of insects which do depend on holly that are native. The goats aren't native, they were introduced here. And yeah, the goats are bad news.
Oh, so the goats have just escaped into the wild from being farmed,
They've been
or
here for 3,000 years,
oh, right,
probably, but
okay.
they're not native animals,
No,
they're
no,
farm
right.
animals, and they really shouldn't be here,
Yeah.
you
So it
know.
upsets the balance, doesn't it? Yeah.
It
So
does.
you have had to put a fence in
Yeah,
around the,
unfortunately, the garden
yeah.
is fenced off, which I don't like, but you can't see it. There's only a few
No,
places where
that's
you
right,
can
that's
see
right.
it.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
tried to move it to the point where it's far enough outside the actual garden that it isn't that noticeable.
Yes.
There's a few places you can
Yes,
see it, but most places you can't,
yeah.
no.
And we mustn't finish without mentioning your beautiful gates, because you've got these wonderful quirky gates. How many, about five or
There's
six?
five different ones,
Yeah, which
yeah.
I mean, you could, I think that could be a serious business there, Carl. You're missing that. You
Yeah,
have a few outside
for
for people
sale.
to say.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think so, yeah.
But I mean, the things that you've physically built as well, I mean, it is just such an achievement. So Carl, if you were, would you do this all over again if you had the chance?
I probably would if I was young enough. Yeah, I probably
Would
would.
you do anything differently?
Here, possibly I wouldn't do it here.
Where would you do it?
Well,
Where would you do it?
I didn't really, I never for a million years thought that I'd ever really get into gardening,
Yeah, because when you
and
bought this,
garden design.
you weren't about,
So I wasn't a gardener, and this is all new. It's all self-taught. It's all just picked up as I go along. Yeah, so I never thought this would happen. If I had thought it would happen, I probably would have moved somewhere where I'd got a decent depth of topsoil, 10 acres of reasonable land. And I would have had a garden that was probably been by now 20 acres. Because the effort, the time, the effort, the money, and the heartache that's gone into creating this garden is immeasurable, to do what I've done in the space of time that I've done it in. But think of what I could have done if it was easier.
Well, my goodness. I mean, and I was just thinking, if you could count every stone that you've moved,
Yeah.
it would be into the hundreds of thousands, wouldn't we?
Do you know? I know every single stone.
Do you
And when
really?
I look at one of these stones,
You
I
remember picking
actually
them up.
remember picking them up.
Seriously?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
There are
Yeah.
very few stones when I'm looking around that I don't
Gosh.
really have a memory
They're
of
old friends,
moving.
really.
They are, yeah. They've been, some of these
Wow.
stones have been moved from pillar to post, from pillar to post. The flat ones I always remember because they're so distinctive.
Yes, yeah.
And if I find flat stones when I'm clearing land, I put them to one side because invariably there's another new flight of stairs going in, or there's another path or something.
Yeah.
So it's handy to have a pile of them hidden away where you can just go and get them and do what you're doing without having to scratch around and look
Yeah,
for them.
yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I've built well over a mile of walls in here since 1999. All
Wow.
these walls are new. Every single wall in the garden is new.
Wow.
There's just one old one, well, one in a bit.
Yeah.
But the others are all just homemade
Yeah.
from rock that's in
Goodness
here.
gracious.
Yeah.
And now, so if people want to come and visit you and see the garden, you have a website?
I don't have a website. It's the internet. There's plenty of information on the internet.
Right.
There is a Facebook page.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sort of open from mid-April. It depends on the weather. I try and open at the beginning of April, but it does depend on the weather. And I keep going right through the season almost every day until, well, sort of now, really. It depends weather and when there's people. If there's nobody around, then it
Yeah.
reaches the point where I just think I'll close, you
So
know.
people can find you via Google
Yeah,
at Caher
Google, just
Bridge
Google Caher Bridge Garden
and
and
then
ring, or
ring.
email is best.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, email is the best way to make a
Yeah.
booking. I only do visits by guided tour.
Right.
There are usually one, there's usually one tour a day throughout the season, sometimes two, but it's usually one. And you just need to book preferably a few days in advance, just in case, because in May, April, May, June, some days are full. I try not to make the groups too big.
Yes, yes.
To keep it personal and to
Yes.
just keep it more comfortable.
Yeah.
So I do get fully booked quite frequently during the high season.
Yeah. And you also
So.
do tours out on the Burren, don't you, as well?
I do that really for groups. I don't do that for individuals. I haven't time,
Yeah,
but I
yeah.
do do it for groups.
Yes,
So it's
yeah.
a combined thing with the
Yes.
garden and the botanics and
Yes,
landscape
yeah.
and geography and geology and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
yeah, I do that as
Yeah.
well.
And do
Yeah.
you have any time for going underground? Potholing,
Not
caving?
really.
No.
To be honest, I'd rather be above ground now. Yeah, I think the trouble is here, we don't get that much sunshine.
Yeah.
And
So you want to be out in
you
it.
kind of really want to make use of the
Yeah.
sunshine. So the idea of going down a hole when it's blue sky is
Yeah.
maybe not a good idea.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
so yeah, anyway, that's it. Yeah,
That's it. Oh,
it is.
brilliant. Well, Carl, it's been a long time for me to get here, and it's been on my list for so long, and I'm so thrilled to have made it this week. And also, cannot believe we have had a whole
We have.
afternoon without rain,
I can't believe
which, wasn't forecast. And
No.
so somewhere there's someone looking down on us and making sure that this hasn't rained today. But thank
So
you
dear.
so much.
Oh,
It's
you're very welcome. Great
been
to meet
such a
you.
pleasure to meet you and see the garden, and I must come back in spring.
Yeah, you must. It is a spring garden.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that keen on this time of the year. I know what's coming,
Yeah, yeah.
and it's past its best, but
Yeah.
it's still okay.
So
But
what month is your what is it
well,
difficult to pinpoint because it
it's
depends on the weather?
very difficult because
Yeah.
it does depend on the weather. I mean, April, I think April is lovely because,
Yeah.
for a start, there's nothing really here.
Yeah.
So you really see the actual architecture of the garden.
Right.
You can see the bones. You can't see them today because it's covered in plants,
Yeah.
but you'll actually see all the terracing. You'll see the walls, you'll see the circles and the half circles that are
Yeah.
built into it. You get an idea of the actual hard design of the garden
Yeah.
in April.
Yeah.
A little bit in May, but plants are beginning to grow then and cover it up. It's fairly empty in April, but you've got all your spring stuff. No leaves on the trees,
Yeah.
a lot more light.
Yeah.
And the huge thing about April and May is the dimension, which is completely absent today.
The Burren.
The bird
Oh,
song.
the bird song. Oh, right. I thought you were going to say the
There are
Burren.
no
No.
birds.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's silent.
Yeah.
Whereas in April and May,
It's full.
it's deafening.
Really? Oh,
And
that's
that
interesting.
level of, that's another layer of a garden, which is essential.
Yeah.
It adds to the garden
Yeah.
and it makes a massive difference here.
Right. Oh,
That
that's
noise
interesting.
is beautiful.
So April, May. Yeah. Well,
April,
I'm
May.
going to be
Yeah,
back.
yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, depending on the weather. I mean, August is lovely.
Yeah, yeah,
It's
yeah,
because
yeah.
August is autumn here.
Yeah.
and August would be the equivalent probably of an English September, October.
Yes, yes,
It's
yeah.
the same sort of color idea and,
Yeah.
faded summer stuff.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
we do that in August. And
I
then
love it.
winter arrives in September.
Oh my
No,
God.
it's
Oh,
not that bad, but well,
yeah.
it's almost that
Sometimes,
bad.
sometimes. Oh, well,
Yeah.
listen, thank you so much, Carl. It's been a real pleasure, and yeah, thank you.
Great.
I'll be back.
Good. Lovely. Great. Glad you enjoyed it. There you are.
Great.
Pause.
Lovely. Thank you so
I hope
much.
you can pick bits out of that.
Oh, we will. We
You can
will. My
edit
God.
it.